Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. We're so identified with these bodies and with the mind, but we don't know what it is. So the practice of meditation helps us to investigate and see, what is it? Who is this? Who is the who? You know, even the owls know who. The very first insight we have when we begin to investigate is into nama-rupa, name and form. When you start to look within the body-mind, you begin to see that they're different. There's the body, the elements, form, the physical sensations, feelings, pain, suffering, all of that. But then there's the whole mental element, the mentality, name, and all that which comes up in consciousness. It's quite distinct from the body. And by noticing this through the mind slowing down and then the mind coming to see the distinction between the mental experience and the physical experience, how very distinct they are, but they are interrelated. And when the mind is slowing down, we're noticing the painfulness of feeling. And even the pain itself can be broken up into many particles. It's not something solid. And we start to realize that whatever reaction we have to that physical pain that makes it seem so huge is a mental event. It's not a physical event. Even the physical sensation of pain, you can feel it in one part of your body, but when you start to investigate it closely, like with the mental stethoscope, it moves. It's not static. It's a process. Pain is a process, and the knowing of pain is a process, and they are different. This is very important information. It's a first insight. It's a breakthrough for us. It's crossing a threshold, because until we cross that threshold, we consider this body and mind. It's just, this is who I am. But once we start understanding the difference between mind and matter, distinct but connected, and both of them process, we can know the mind more and more deeply through this Dhamma practice, through this meditative slowing down the whole process, examining it through a microscope. The mind can examine itself to a point where all the segments of seeing the mind arise in consciousness like a movie, in flashes. And we begin to deeply know this process of consciousness. And we understand by our own experience the beauty, the miracle of this practice is we realize there's no person. Where are you? Who is the you? Who is it? The second insight that comes as a result of knowing that, a direct result of knowing that, is conditionality. So there's a cause-effect relationship in every nuance of our physical and mental activity. Everything. So they're conditioned. And then on top of that, we have the insight into impermanence. So where is this self? It is actually a blessing in disguise, but the world will never tell you that. Because you're discovering the truth of how things are, that everyone believes in the self, and this becomes very solid, and then we cannot let go of it. We're convinced that this is a self, and we keep feeding that concept. But when it's all blown apart and you're living in movable feast where nothing is stable, it can be so disorienting. But what you're seeing is the truth of how things really are. And the world doesn't operate according to that principle at all. If it did, it would be a very different world. People would be kind all the time. Selfishness could not take root. What we're seeing is everything that we're attached to is impermanent, so why are we attached to it? It's not real. It's not true. And so it gives us cause for letting go of greed, cause for letting go of ill will, cause for letting go of selfishness. Why are we so greedy about possessing things? This is mine. Don't take this away from me. And the world is circling on selfishness, on creating boundaries, borders, not sharing, not taking care. So the whole basis for the Buddha's teaching is about love and compassion. And if there is nothing to attach to, then we start to realize the importance of good conduct, of finding the truth. Why are we here? What is the meaning of this life? And it is a transcendent meaning. This life is based on our karmic predicament. So we know the importance of developing goodness, of developing an ethical core within us, and practicing virtue so that we can realize this truth, realize it for ourselves, and wake up to the truth of this, why we're born. And do we want to be born again and again and again? Live and die, live and die, live and die. So the beginning of seeing the impermanence, the selflessness, there's no solid being in there. There's nothing to hold on to, really. And all that we hold on to is death-bound. So we have more cause to practice and realize the truth, to awaken to this truth, and to understand it more deeply. The Four Noble Truths are really about this, that everything is suffering. Dukkha. Why is it dukkha? Because there's nothing to hold on to. If it's all mental and physical process, what are we trying to hold on to? Our youth? Our strength? Our life? When it's all just evaporating, what are people running after? It makes no sense. So it's a huge karmic question. What are we doing here? Question mark. Four Noble Truths. The truth of suffering is a noble truth. Why? Because if we try to escape from suffering and we see that everything is impermanent, we can't escape it. We're forced to study it. We're forced to look at it. We're not who we think we are. Then who are we? We want to discover that. We need to study this impermanence. And then we see that the impermanence itself causes that we can't hold on to anything. But the emptiness of that is a cause for actually celebration. Because if we can understand the meaning of this emptiness, then we know that we can be free from attachment. If there's nothing really to hold on to, then we urgently want to stop being slaves to attachment, slaves to having, to holding, to getting, to defending, to being. Being a somebody who's going somewhere, getting something. Then we lay waste our true power, which is the enlightenment of the mind. If we were all enlightened beings, we would live in a very different universe. But the freedom from birth and death is really the secret here. Because we think it's a great thing to be born, but actually there's so much birth and death and birth and death that the cycle never stops. It's an endless cycle. Rohitasa asked the Buddha, what is the end of the world? And the Buddha tells him that he's traveled to the end of the world, but there is no end to the world. There's no reaching the end of this world because there's endless worlds. The only way to reach it is to extinguish suffering. So the end of the world is actually in the heart. That's where the ending of suffering is. But we human beings always think that the answer is outside of ourselves. And once we understand the truth of suffering, we start to look for the answers to our existence, not in the world, because we'll never find it in the world, but we look for it in our mind, in the mind itself. That's where we find the end of the world. There is no end to getting pleasure and losing. It doesn't end. Running because we're compelled by craving, but it's endless. The mind is insatiable, reaching madly, wildly for getting, get more, and stuff the mind with it. Pleasant sounds, sights, tastes, sensations, pleasant holidays, the most exotic holiday you can imagine. Now you can go on a rocket ship. You can have that kind of holiday. Next holiday will be go to Mars or wherever. Something new and more, and the craving won't stop. But human beings don't realize that. They keep inventing new kinds of vacations, but they're all vacant. Because the heart, we never get content with it. What will give contentment to this heart is when we stop craving, giving birth again and again to the wanting mind. When we wake up to the truth, the heart no longer longs for experiences. And the Buddha realized this. The ending of traveling the world is in the heart. And when we travel to the end of desire, that's enlightenment. That's awakening. That's Nibbana. But if you look for that in the world, you never find it. It has to be found through the mind knowing itself. And the mind knowing dukkha, suffering, that's why it's a noble truth. That is the brilliance of the Buddha in seeing that without knowing suffering, we always look for pleasure. But when we know suffering and we study suffering, we see the cause of it. And then, knowing the cause of suffering, we realize that the only ending for suffering is in understanding suffering. Understanding the origin of it and the cessation of it through this Noble Eightfold Path. And the cessation of it can only happen when the mind stops looking for more pleasant sensation. When the mind sees suffering and understands that stillness, that emptiness, that's the real holiday. It's ending, it's a cessation, but it's the beginning of true understanding. And we wake up. When we wake up to the truth, the heart no longer longs for experiences. It has no longing for experiences. And there are four stages of awakening. But in the first stage, at least, one has cut off the result of unfortunate birth. And one has cut off wrong view. We no longer believe that this is me, this body-mind. This is not who I am, because these are just processes that have been karmically loaded and come into existence as a human being through a fortunate, it's a fortunate birth. Because this is the one realm that has that very good mix of suffering and pleasure, where we can have enough good conditions for realizing this awakened mind, this consciousness that will help us realize the truth of how things are and not walk around in delusion. We're all born into a state of at least some delusion. Greed, hatred, and delusion. The Buddha didn't even want to teach at first because he said that we have dusty minds. The veil of delusion is so thick. How would beings be able to understand the subtleness of this teaching? So this practice of stopping has in it a very important function for us. It's not for no reason that we're trying to calm the mind. At first you think, well, just calm is good. But we want more than calm. We want the mind to really stop hungering for experience, thirsting for craving for something outside of itself to feed on. And the hindrances are part of our delusion. Fortunately, the Buddha gave us a map of consciousness. And within that map of consciousness, we have very specific directions about how to bring the mind to cessation and how to understand the process, this mental process, physical process, how to get the insights into anicca, dukkha, anatta. And then when those three insights into impermanence, suffering, and the emptiness of all phenomena, all conditioned phenomena, when those insights become so developed that everything that we see seems to be just process, that's a very powerful insight. If we have that fourth insight, Udiyabhaya Jnana, then we have very strong understanding of impermanence and a very powerful understanding of the suffering that that brings. At first, it's exhilarating to see the truth like that, to see even our whole body just as a mass of motion, just molecules. It's as if you were in a laboratory and somebody gave you a very powerful microscope and you looked at your skin and you saw just atomic matter or more. Now there are more powerful microscopes that can see nanospheres. But you can see that the reality, even of this building, it looks solid and it isn't. It's not. It's just held together through physics. But it could blow down in the biggest wind. Even all the buildings, when we had a tornado last year at Derecho that was hell on wheels, we didn't know what was going on. Things just falling over that you didn't think would fall over, but fortunately, none of our buildings disappeared. But the body, look at this body, it just can go like that. It's so vulnerable. We're so temporary. We really need to work hard while we're here. This is very urgent for us to wake up because these bodies could be gone in a flash. Any moment. The whole planet is speeding around. But while we're here, we can wake up. So after you have that insight, the very next thing, it suddenly becomes frightening. And so we have deep states of exhilaration, but we also have deep states of fear. It's very important that when we go through this map of consciousness, we have somebody with us that can tell us it's okay. Otherwise, we'd get so scared, maybe we would stop meditating because you think you're going crazy. But you're not. Because it comes a point where you don't know what to do with all this. How do you make sense of what at first is very interesting and you want to study it and you get excited, but after a while the implications of that are so earth-shattering that your whole life is turned upside down. That's why when people came to listen to the Buddha, very often they would say, "Magnificent Lord, you have turned right side up what was upside down," but their whole life is transformed in such a way because he handed them an important piece of information that would help them understand where to find the answer, how to find the answer, instead of walking around in confusion. And so that's why we're here. We're looking deeply within our own consciousness for these answers that the world will never tell us, because it's busy recreating itself. It's busy satisfying mega greed, hatred, and delusion through wars and meetings and skyscrapers and satellites and you name it. The world is creating it. But all of it can be destroyed in a flash. The reality to which we're waking up is indestructible. It's the only indestructible. Everything else is subject to destruction except Nibbana. So that's an offering for tonight.